Thank you very much, Judy. Now, our next speaker is Nick Hillman, who spends a lot of his time thinking about these questions as director of HEPI, the Higher Education Policy Institute, spends even more time thinking about them in the past as an advisor in government, and I note from your bio as a former teacher as well.
Indeed, yeah, for a school teacher, not a university teacher. Yeah. I'm going to stand up if that's okay. Thanks very much for inviting me to speak. I think it's great that Demos, Physiological Society, and Wes and HEPI are all coming together for this. It's not as busy a place as people think, the higher education think tank space. So I think it's great that sometimes people think as a specialist think tank like HEPI, we might not like working with the other more general think tanks. But I think it's fantastic when the bigger think tanks take an interest in HE. And I think it's also fantastic that the Physiological Society has done so much work on good teaching in HE, because the learned societies play a much bigger role in the UK than they do in most other countries, actually. But they haven't particularly been known for doing things on teaching, and I think it's fantastic the Physiological Society has done that. And it's also great to be sharing a platform with Wes. The next, I'd rather you didn't tweet the next two sentences, because it's all embargoed till the middle of October, but the next HEPI publication is going to be an update on some work we did before the election on whether or not students were an important group of voters, and we're going back and revisiting our predictions, some of which were frankly wrong because they were based on opinion polls, and we look at whether students are an important group of voters in the election. And there are a few seats that really stand out, and actually Wes is one seat that really stands out with the scale of the swing that Wes did fantastically in May, and it's great to have such a sane voice on higher education now in the House of Commons. And it's also a great pleasure for me to be here, because as a Tory party apparatchik for 10 years, it's only my second Labour Party conference, and I always think they're great when they're at the seaside as well. So I'm one of those strange people who enjoys party conferences. But my answer to the overarching question, who cares about teaching and who should care about teaching in HE, like Wes and Judy actually, is I do. And actually, I think we all should, because if we believe in the power of higher education to deliver both public and private benefits, including productivity, financial rewards, transforming people's individual lives, then actually we should all care about what goes on in higher education and the quality of the teaching and learning experience. And I also care about it, again, like many people, because of my own personal experience. I went to university before there were any fees at all, not even £1,000 fees. I went to Manchester, and if Wendy had been here, I might not have said where it was, but I went to Manchester in 1990, and I had a great time. I met my wife and my mother and my two children. Same person, by the way. But it was probably, in many ways, it was the best 3 years of my life. But I've got to say, the quality of the teaching was not that good. In fact, it was pretty woeful. And I don't blame the university for that, and I don't blame the lecturers for that. I blame the fact that the unit of resource, the amount of funding available for educating each undergraduate, was very small. It had been falling for 15 years, and it went on falling for another 8 years until Blair and his government, quite rightly, began to grapple that problem on the back of the Deering Report. And then, of course, there were £1,000 fees, and then there were £3,000 fees, and then there were £9,000 fees, and I worked, as Duncan said, on the package of reforms in the 2010 to 2012 period. And whatever the controversies about the current funding regime, about how much of the money will come back, about the level of debts on each individual, about the supposed marketisation of higher education, I still think that we have to recognise, and again, Wes did recognise this, that universities now get a decent slug of money for teaching. They'd like more, and it was a little bit of extra money, actually, in 2012, because the universities used to get about 7.5, and even once you've taken capital cuts and access requirements into account, there was a little bit of extra money for universities in 2012, though, of course, inflation has since eroded that. But I think back in 2010, the coalition, as I said, I was part of that as an advisor, we did try to have our cake and eat it, because on the one hand, we said to students, don't worry, the world will feel the same, this isn't real debt, it's nothing like credit card debt, just keep on doing what you were doing in the past, go on, as young people, go on to university in the same sort of proportions to what you did in the past, don't worry about it. But we said to universities, students will be much more demanding, they'll be demanding consumers, they'll want much more, you've got to give them a totally different sort of experience. And I think of those two arguments, they both turned out to be half true, because full-time student numbers continued pretty much on the same trajectory. Part-time numbers fell, not quite off a cliff, but fell very significantly. And in fact, we're doing some work Some of you are at the Open University breakfast this morning discussing that. We're doing some work on the part-time issue. On the other hand, universities, I think, did deliver more to their students, but it was incremental and it wasn't sort of overnight shift. We did a report back in February called What Do I Get?, where we had 10 senior sector leaders contribute chapters saying how their strategies had changed since £9,000 fees came in. And it was a story of sort of incremental but beneficial change. But I still think my old boss, David Willis, did a sort of valedictory interview just before he stopping an MP saying teaching he regarded as unfinished business. And I think Joe Johnson is probably right to latch onto this as the issue where the government does now need to put more focus, even though I actually think the single biggest cause of the TEF is the fact that politicians don't have a single data point they can point to prove teaching has got better, to prove that argument they used back in 2010. Because they have that on the ref. If a politician wants to, or a policymaker wants to prove the UK is brilliant at research, it can point to the ref, or it can point to the Elsevier study that's done once every 2 years for BIS, which shows we get more bang for buck for every pound of any country in the world on the research. But there's no real equivalent on the teaching side. So I have a slightly simplistic view as to why the government's interested in this. But I've got to say, our own researcher, HEPI, backs it up. We do a big annual student experience survey with the HEA, and this year's survey showed that, as always, as it has done all the other years, the students, on average — there are differences between students, of course — on average, students only do three quarters of the work that QAA, the Quality Assurance Agency, say they should. We also did a survey where we asked students, who do you think works harder, the international students or the home students? And 54% of people say students say that international students work harder, and only 4% of students say the Brits, who haven't, of course, travelled halfway around the world to be here, work as hard. So I think there is room for improvement. But of course, the devil is in the detail. Joe Johnson has promised the TEF is not going to be big, bossy or bureaucratic. But he's got to design a mechanism that recognises that good teaching comes in very different shapes and sizes. It can be, you know, on a distance learning course where there's data analytics are used to make sure teaching and learning is happening properly. It can be on the Oxbridge tutorial model. It can be on a really good vocational course at a newer university. So he's got to come up with a mechanism that delivers all those things. And like Wes, I actually think the motto of the TEF should be like the old Guinness advert: good things come to those who wait. I worry about the timetable that's been set, especially for the TEF light, the mechanism for deciding whether universities can raise their fees in 2017. To raise your fees in 2017, as those of you in the room from institutions know, you need to know what your fees are going to be in 2016, so you can tell people are coming on open days and in prospectuses and applying. And even if you didn't need to know that, the student loans company would need to, because their computers are so creaky. So I just want to say four very quick things on the detail of the TEF that concerns me. The first is, it's fashionable in institutions to say contact hours and class size don't matter. And I understand all the arguments on that. However, students do care about those things, and there may be a way in which we certainly need to think how the two trade off one against the other. A one-to-one tutorial is not the same as a lecture with 400 other students, and yet the data often makes it look the same. But we do need to think about how we as a sector want the government to grapple with that issue, because otherwise it could be done in simplistic ways. And I think that we should grapple with it, because I think contact hours and class size do actually matter. Secondly, although Kingsley Amos was clearly wrong to say more will mean worse, the expansion of the sector brings a different sort of student, or more first and family type students, into the system. And if you go around, as I do, I visit a lot of universities and talk, for example, to the counsellors and the mental health practitioners in universities, they bring, you know, it brings a new sort of student and a different sort of challenge. And we need to think about the whole broader student experience, not just the academic experience. Because otherwise we'll see what they saw in Australia when the student numbers cap came off, which is a big increase in non-continuation rates. And I think that would be a bad thing. Thirdly, as I've said, I'm a bit sceptical about linking the TEF to the raising of fees. And fourthly, I wasn't going to make this point, but Judy made it powerfully, that I just wanted to add a sort of coda to what Judy says. The extra focus on teaching does potentially drive a wedge between research and teaching in universities. Because it could, I had an economics professor approach me and say, would I run a blog, which we did, on the HEPI website, explaining why it might incentivize people to specialize. So you may end up with even more specialist researchers and specialist teachers in universities, and fewer of the people who sit in between doing the sort of scholarship and in, you know, research-informed teaching. And I think that's an interesting point, which would be a risk, or maybe an opportunity, I don't know. And for me, I think the goal should be, you know, we perform as a country. We have world-class university sector. Every global league table shows we have the second-best universities in the world beyond the US. But, of course, they don't factor in teaching. And for me, the goal should be, if they start factoring in teaching, that our performance relative to other countries doesn't fall. And I don't know if I'm allowed to do this at a sort of another think tank's event, but can I just advertise our annual lecture? Because on the 1st of December, we've got Andreas Schleicher, who's Director of Education at the OECD, and therefore the man behind the PISA studies, for example, in school, who is trying to do something similar in higher education with a project called EHALO that is about to fall over because countries like the UK have refused to take part in it. And anyway, he probably knows as much about anybody about relative performance of different higher education systems across the world. And we've only got about 230 places, and he's delivering the lecture on the 1st of December. So if you want to come, do let me know. Thanks.
Yes, you are allowed to do that.
Thank you.
So we've got a little bit of time for some questions. Feels like there's plenty of ground.